If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
Missouri lawmakers are struggling to find consensus on a critical tax that helps fund the state's Medicaid program. The struggle involves whether to include language restricting public funding for Planned Parenthood and certain types of contraception. Democratic State Representative Tracy McCreary of Olivet says some Republicans are playing a dangerous game with Missouri's finances. And she joins us on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about the way forward on what's known as the federal reimbursement allowance. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We have to talk about things that matter to people.
I've tried to bring that same aggressive, iconoclast style with me to the United States Senate.
I think my district is a model for the state.
We put Missourians first.
You just kind of have to find the common ground with people.
I believe that this district deserves someone who represents their values.
After I came back to St. Louis, I started thinking that I could have a bigger role on the change that I wanted to make.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. We have a real treat, everybody, because my co-host today is St. Louis Public Radio's senior political correspondent.
Joe Manis. Yeah, erstwhile, occasional.
It's great to have you back in studio, Joe.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
And another guest we have not had in a while, since 2017.
Oh, my gosh.
Where does the time go on this show?
Hey, I was still working full time.
our guest today, she represents the
88th State House District.
That is Tracy McCreary, a Democrat from Olivet. As we'll talk about later in the show, a newly minted state Senate candidate. But before we talk about issues or your future political endeavors, can you just remind our listeners what the 88th District entails?
Sure. It's Olivet West all the way out to Chesterfield past Woods Mill. Generally, the northern boundary is Olive Boulevard, and the southern boundary is I-64 or Highway 40, depending on how you like to call that highway.
So when we first talked about having you back on the show, we had to basically be like, well, we got to make sure we're scheduling around this special session on the federal reimbursement allowance. Well, it is Monday, 1:18:09, and there is no special session on this extremely important bill that will fund Missouri state government. Joe, do you want to just explain what the actual issue is?
Well, okay, there's two parts to it. But the bottom line is this procedure that we're talking about, what they're trying to block or blocking is a special funding source that basically funds most of the state's portion of the Medicaid program, which otherwise is funded by the federal government. And as long as the stalemate goes on, it threatens the entire program. And really the fight's over two different things. State Senator Bob Onder, who's a physician, wants to prevent Planned Parenthood from getting any money under the Medicaid program for its reproductive services that it provides. And then you've got State Senator Paul Wieland, who wants to prevent Medicaid from covering certain
types of contraception
that he contends are actually abortifacients.
So I want to play a clip now from Senator Wieland where he explains the reason he's pushing so hard on this issue.
My thinking now is I just don't want that to be part of the Medicaid program. There's a lot of misinformation out there saying that we're doing away with all birth control. That's not true. I'm not outlawing these drugs. I'm just saying that these things should not be paid for by the state. It's kind of the same thing every year I vote against the correction bill. I'm a pro-life guy. I don't vote for the correction bill because we're funding drugs that put people to death. I don't think we should fund drugs on the front end that put people to death either.
Now, I imagine, Representative, you have a very different perspective on this issue. What do you make of the special session impasse, and what do you make of the fact that Senators Wieland and Onder are trying to get this language in the FRA bill?
Well, the source of funding that comes from the federal reimbursement allowance is a critical part of how we in the Missouri legislature balance our budget. So by having this intra-party struggle over forms of birth control, you know, I see nothing fiscally responsible about what's happening right now. I'm quite concerned that we are playing Russian roulette with a very, very important source of funding that helps run our Missouri Medicaid program that we call Missouri Health Net.
I've heard from some House Republicans that they would prefer to have an FRA without either of these amendments. Is that actually true, or do you think that sort of the senatorial demands have bled over into the House, and this one of these amendments is going to end up into law?
Well, the House exhibited that they were the adults in that building. We've been doing that now. The House has been for several years, in my opinion. The House did pass a clean FRA towards the end of session this year. And so I believe Republican leadership in the House that they would prefer to be fiscally responsible and pass a clean FRA and do the right thing for the state and stop this silly fight that we're having over birth control.
This could go on for a long time, and if it does, this will affect the state budget bigly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the governor is going to have to make some withholds or cuts within a few months if this isn't resolved. I think that people may not understand that the Medicaid program in Missouri, which already is restrictive, basically covers people who, women and children who don't have any income at all.
Right.
And if they make over about $3,000 a year with one child, they don't get anything. The Medicaid expansion, which was approved by voters and which is technically another issue but actually sort of related to this, basically would cover people who work but don't get insurance up to a certain level that now are in fast food jobs or other where they can't get insurance. So that kind of affects this too, because many of those people are women who would take advantage of birth control services if they got Medicaid coverage.
Just to bounce off that point before I ask my next question, Joe is right. I just did a story for Weekend Edition about the Medicaid expansion fight and found out that the maximum amount of money that a single mother with one child can make and still qualify for Medicaid is less than $3,000 a year.
A year.
If they're not disabled or whatnot.
Now, that's in Missouri, not other states.
Right.
But if Medicaid expansion is ordered by the courts, it would expand to, I think, about in that same scenario, about $25,000 a year or so. So I don't see this fight as like a philosophical argument. I mean, if this the Wieland Amendment gets through, you're shutting off certain forms of contraception for potentially tens of thousands of women that don't have it right now. So my question for you is, how do you combat this? Because this could have really serious policy ramifications if it passes and is ultimately upheld.
Well, this is quite concerning. And this attack on birth control is something that is not partisan. Unlike a lot of other things in reproductive health, that birth control is nonpartisan, and I believe an attack on birth control is an attack on women's health care. And I think many of my constituents and many of your listeners, quite frankly, do not want to see Missouri go down a path where, depending on what kind of insurance you have access to different forms of health care. I think the decision about what is the best form of birth control for a woman is up to each individual woman and her doctor. And if the Wieland Amendment were to get on, we're basically telling doctors that they have less tools in their toolbox to help their patients.
I want to talk about the Under Amendment, too. And Joe could probably provide a little bit more context about this. Right now, Missouri Medicaid does not reimburse or subsidize abortions. So we're not talking about money that would go to Planned Parenthood to pay for abortion services.
Correct.
But it would go to Planned Parenthood to pay for other things. And Joe, can you kind of explain what Planned Parenthood would provide?
Yeah, because their clinics, many of them provide birth control services, reproductive health screenings, that sort of thing. And that stuff is covered by Medicaid and various legal efforts in here and other states by social conservatives to block Planned Parenthood from getting its share of that money have been unsuccessful.
And my understanding is the reason why we don't have a special session now is not because of any hangups over the Wieland Amendment. It's about whether to pursue the Onder Amendment, which he talked about with me about a week ago.
Over and over again, we have passed pro-life protective language as part of the budget. The reason we're having this discussion now in the context of the FRA is that last summer, in the case of Planned Parenthood versus Department of Health and Senior Services, the Missouri Supreme Court ruled that we, quote, couldn't make policy in the budget. So that's what put us in a situation where we couldn't just put the pro-life language in a budget bill. We have to put it permanently in statute. So that's why we are where we are today.
What's your response to Senator Onder and his push to prevent any Medicaid reimbursement to Planned Parenthood?
Well, Senator Onder is both a lawyer and a doctor, and I really wish he would use some of those skills that he learned in his education, because last year the court clearly said that we cannot take Planned Parenthood out of being able to provide health care to women who are on Medicaid. And, you know, for those of us that drive around the St. Louis region, there are little Planned Parenthood clinics all around town that people can get to on foot. They don't have to have a car. These are clinics that actually provide health care in communities. They don't provide abortions. And what Dr. Onder, Senator Onder, is trying to do is to just say that Planned Parenthood, who is a very well-respected provider of women's reproductive care, they do breast cancer screenings, they do STD testing. He's basically saying that they shouldn't even be allowed to have money for those life-saving, life-changing services that they give to both men and women.
I think the added complication here, we've already established this is a very complicated situation, is Missouri Right to Life, which is a very influential group among Republican legislators, has come out and saying they will oppose any FRA renewal every step of the way if it doesn't include both of these amendments. How do you all get out of this? Like, this seems like it's not your responsibility because you're a Democrat, but I'm sure you do want to get out of this with an FRA, you know, renewed so that the state budget doesn't have like a $3 or $4 billion hole in it.
I mean, we have to figure out a way to get out of this. You know, I am a Democrat, but I'm also fiscally responsible. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that the majority party, who campaigns every election year on being fiscally responsible, that they're willing to do something like this. This is a gamble on steroids. This is so irresponsible. It will throw Missourians are proud that we are a state that has to have a balanced budget. And if we do not get this FRA, this federal reimbursement allowance, across the finish line in time, we are going to have a budget crisis, a huge budget crisis.
We're talking about billions of dollars here, not millions, billions of dollars here that come from the federal government. But we have to supply that federal reimbursement allowance, which basically covers the little state portion. And I think people don't always realize how much money Missouri gets from the federal government to fund Medicaid. And in fact, the Medicaid expansion, which also now is hung up in the courts, the federal government would pay virtually all of it. I mean, there'd be very little that would come from state money. But the philosophical fight, whether one agrees or disagrees, has really conflated these two issues. So you've got the, I think Planned Parenthood, I mean, Missouri Right to Life is trying to take a stand on this because they see this as having an impact in other issues, related issues, next year.
Yeah, just to put this in perspective, we passed the budget, the governor signed the budget. Our budget for fiscal year 22 in the state of Missouri was $35.1 billion. The state funding from the FRA is about $2.65 billion in state funding, which is about 7.2% of our state budget. So it's significant. And, you know, the governor has threatened to go to the balanced budget we just passed, and start doing withholds. Quite honestly, I don't know how we can cut that much out of the budget and not have people suffering.
Well, I have one way. You could take the $2.8 billion from the American Rescue Plan and do that. But I mean,
we're not allowed to do that.
Well, then you've just taken that off the table.
Yeah.
And plus, even if you could do that, do you really want to take that money and plug a hole that you could use with some other revenue source? Wouldn't you want to use that money for roads or rural broadband or you know, building a shrine to Jim the Wonder Dog or something like that. I don't mean to be flippant that, but my point is there's a lot of things you could use that money for in rural and urban areas.
Yeah, but the Biden administration has been very clear, I mean, in that law, is that you can't use that money to substitute for other stuff. I mean, that's why there's been this fight with some states who wanted to do tax cuts and stuff and cover it they can't.
I think you could cover budgetary deficits, but I don't think that this would be considered a budgetary deficit.
This would be considered a tax cut, in my opinion, and the Biden administration very clearly has said we cannot use that money to help fill in the gaps from tax cuts.
Okay, so we've already asked, like, how are we going to get out of this? And perhaps by the time the show is posted, which will probably be Tuesday, you know, the governor and the legislative leaders will have come to some sort of agreement and there will be a special session. Do you have any predictions about how this will end, given that we've already laid out the fact that, you know, the stakes are extraordinarily high from a financial perspective?
I don't know how it will end, and I'm very concerned about it, but I have great faith in how the legislative body works, and I do think that there are some very calm, level heads in both the House and the Senate, and I'm hoping that we can get together and figure out a way to move forward.
We'll be right back after this quick break with State Representative Tracy McCreary.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Joe Manis and State Representative Tracy McCreary. Okay, so I want to talk about a special session that is actually going to happen later in the year, and that is on congressional redistricting. Now, people that listen to the show know that I love this topic. I've tried to restrain myself because I get really in the weeds. But, you know, since we are only on minute 16 of this episode, I think we can go a little bit more in the weeds here. Because I think redistricting policy has been something you've been following for a while. I'm going to be really candid and blunt with you. I think the Democrats have no leverage on this. Republicans could basically pass a congressional map that only allows for one Democratic district if they really wanted to. We'll get into it later if they're actually going to do that. How do Democrats do anything to, you know, influence the direction of this map, given that they're at such a weak point of leverage on this?
Well, and it's no secret that Democrats are in the super minority in both the House and the Senate. But I truly believe that Missourians who are represented by Republicans are going to be communicating with their elected officials between now and when we have our special session on redistricting about the importance of making sure the maps are drawn fairly. So this should be a nonpartisan issue. When you're out in town, it's a nonpartisan issue, but communities want to be able to have choices when they go to vote. They don't want the primary to be the only place where they vote for people. And so I think that Missourians are going to be communicating that they want fairly drawn maps, and they want to make sure that it's not legislators drawing maps to benefit some of their friends who are running for Congress.
Illinois Democrats just passed state legislative and judicial maps that absolutely brutalized Republicans. And their argument was, hey, Illinois Democrats have won all these critical elections for the governor and legislature. This is a Democratic state. It would actually be unfair to give Republicans equal weight in crafting a map that is equal. Now, we'll get to this in a minute. I don't think Missouri Republicans are making that argument because they may not do like a 7-to-1 map, but like they could make a solid philosophical argument that they've won every election that matters in this process, and that drawing quote unquote fair maps would actually be unfair to Republican voters that have voted for all these Republicans. What would you say to that?
Well, what I would say is, you know, they have won a lot of elections, but they've won because and then this goes back to redistricting of the Missouri House and Senate lines a decade ago, is we did not have fairly drawn maps a decade ago. So some of this is a false equivalence, if you will. So I do not believe that that Missourians want the maps to be rigged up to benefit one party or another. And I'm hoping, and I've not seen behavior from my colleagues that that's the direction they're headed.
Yeah, I mean, some Democrats have argued for years that while, granted, the Republicans have won the last few cycles, it's not like they have an 80 or 90% percentage support among voters. It's more like 60-40, 55-45, depending on what's going on. So the argument has been that actually there should be, let's say, three of the eight congressional seats should be Democrats. Well, I think that the Republican threat of trying to make it, which they've done before, to go after the Kansas City area district, there is some danger in that, because while that could happen, that would create those several districts, I would argue, that would then statewide, that would then be not as Republican and more swing districts, and Republicans or whoever, but Republicans in particular haven't been too keen on that.
I mean, to put a finer point on this, the reason why there's some Republicans that don't want to, you know, just decimate the 5th district, which is currently held by Emanuel Cleaver,
right,
is they don't want to make the 6th district, which is held by Sam Graves, a Republican, or the 4th district, which, you know, 10,000 Republicans are now running for. They don't want to put those districts in jeopardy in a wave Democratic year.
Because the Graves district in particular could be in jeopardy. Suburban.
Several Republicans have come on the show and basically have told me that. Is that what you're also hearing from your colleagues, that they may essentially have a somewhat status quo map, except, and we'll talk about this in a second, maybe make the second district more Republican? Is that kind of where we're headed at this point?
That's what I'm hearing. But the thing that makes me anxious about ultimately what will happen in the fall is that Republicans, both in Missouri and nationwide, feel like they might be able to take Congress back, mm-hmm. the House of Representatives in D.C. And so there's a strong pull to help as much as possible to turn that chamber.
But, I mean, whether or not Republicans win the majority is not really dependent on whether Emanuel Cleaver wins or loses or not, right?
Exactly. But there's just a lot of pull for being able to win that chamber back.
So let's talk about the second district. You're in the first district.
I'm in the first district, yes.
Yes. So I want to make that clear. So this is not a question that affects you politically for now. I think I've heard it's almost fait accompli that the main objective, if they keep the fifth district alone, is going to be to make the second district go from a 50-50-ish district. And I mean, Ann Wagner won by more than 50-50, but as far as Biden-Trump, I think it was exactly 50-50, Joe.
Yes.
Am I wrong about that?
No,
I think like
you're
Trump won it by 118 votes or something. They want to go from that to making it into a 60-40 Republican district, which would not really be that difficult, because the first district has to expand. You could put more Democratic parts of the second district into the first and then put more of St. Charles or Jeffco in the second.
Yeah, but I think then it could endanger Wagner in the second, at least in the primary.
Yes.
I mean, that's my point. I mean, the first district, which is now represented by Cori Bush, the first will have to expand because of population loss. But yeah, you run into this where Bush would be taking more suburban Democrats, but then Ann Wagner would be taking more Republicans from farther out, like St. Charles and stuff. And they have been pushing to have one of their own.
Yeah.
So I think it could make it more difficult for her in a primary. Plus, I'm not sure how safe they can make the second as far as Republican, because I think St. Charles is changing a little bit.
Yeah. And let's play. I guess we're going a lot of different directions here. But, like, you know, Ann Wagner already proved that she can win in a 50-50 district.
Yes.
Does she even really need it to be super safe?
Well, Congresswoman Wagner has proven that she is a very, very tough candidate. And she does a good job as a congresswoman. But I think every elected official, you know, our instincts are you do hope that you don't have to work quite as hard. And, you know, there tens of millions of dollars were spent to help Representative Wagner win that seat. And I think, you know, that's a lot of work for all involved.
So here's another curveball question. So we did mention that Senator Onder is one of the people that's holding up this special session, and Senator Igel, who's also from St. Charles, is also with him on the Planned Parenthood part. Both of them have told me they want a St. Charles-centric congressional seat with all of St. Charles in it.
Yeah, they've been lobbying that for a while.
How energetic do you think the other Republicans in the legislature are going to be to put all of St. Charles in a congressional district when they're forcing – when I say they – Onder and Igel are forcing everybody to come back for a special session?
Well, maybe that's something that's used for some kind of negotiation as well. I mean, this is what is so frustrating to me as somebody who gets to vote on these congressional maps is this is more about politics and like how we as legislators draw maps to help colleagues either because a lot of our colleagues in the House and Senate right now hope to be in Congress soon. So, you know, do we really want the legislature doing things for their friends or for federal elected officials? That's not the way we should be doing this.
Now, you do not want to run for Congress.
I do not.
You want to run for the state Senate and specifically Jill Shoup's 24th district seat. Why did you decide that you wanted to run for the state Senate seat?
Well, we've sort of danced around the issue all during this podcast. For the entire time I've been in elected office, the majority party has ignored the real issues facing our state. Instead, we get drawn in all these directions that Missourians don't want them to be going. So, you know, I ran for office in 2011 to be an independent voice for just common sense solutions. And I have vowed to focus on real issues. And that's what I want to do. I want to work on real issues. And I believe me in the Senate will allow me to speak out for those things that people want us to be working on, like being able to keep college tuition affordable, being able to keep utility rates low, you know, making sure that our schools have the funding they need so that we're training kids for jobs of the future and they're ready for those jobs and they can get to the jobs on roads that actually are functional. So, you know, I have so many things I want to work on, and I just think the majority party is not doing that right now. And this show is an example of that.
So I want to read a tweet now from a former inhabitant of the 24th District, John Lamping. It was a quote tweet of former Senator Jeff Smith talking about how great you are and also how great you are to his parents.
Of course, Lamping used to.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. He says, and by the way, John Lamping is a very conservative Republican. This race, if opposed by someone, not likely, won't be close. Well, let me tell you why how significant that is. First of all, John Lamping won a very close race in 2010 over Barbara Frazier to represent the 24th district.
Right.
4 years later, Jill Shoup and Jay Ashcroft had the most expensive competitive race, I think, of all, I think, in the entire state.
Yes,
out of any race.
They did.
Maybe county executive, possibly. I don't know. 2018 was not close. And I think that after state legislative redistricting, as we kind of talked offline, I think some of the western St. Louis County parts of this district could be put in with Senator Igel's district, which could make this district like a 65-70% Democratic district. Now, obviously, you're not taking that for granted at all, but like that has when I told you when I just read that from John Lamping, that probably gives you a little bit of pause in a good way, I would assume, right?
Well, to me, it's a great honor that former Senator John Lamping thinks that I would be a good fit for the district because, you know, the current Senator Jill Shoup thinks that as well. And part of that is I'm very proud of being able to work with people on both sides of the aisle to get things done. But that doesn't mean I'm a pushover. I will never back down on things that I care about. And I am a fighter. I care about consumers. I care about senior citizens. I care about students. I care about victims of violence. You know, so although I can work really well with other people, I'm also very courageous and I'm willing to stand up and speak out.
So as you mentioned, Shoup has endorsed you. Former Secretary of State Jason Kander endorsed you. Former Governor Bob Holden endorsed you. And your announcement was, you know, celebrated by a whole different bunch of people, as I mentioned. But as I just mentioned, if this is like a super Democratic district after redistricting, it wouldn't surprise me if other people want to get into this race, too. Are you expecting to have a vigorous Democratic primary for this? And if so, if this becomes it moves away from, you know, intense general election to whoever wins the Democratic primary is the next senator. How do you stand out against any hypothetical opponent?
Well, I expect to have both a vigorous primary and a very healthy general as well. This part of St. Louis County it's a very important Senate district. But that being said, I've been a community activist, community volunteer, businesswoman, and now an elected official I've devoted my life to this community. And I think that my credentials as a volunteer and as a state legislator show that I'm on the right side of issues, whether you're talking to a Democratic voter or even a Republican voter.
Before we let you go, do you expect there to be, for your current job as a House member, do you expect there to be any other special sessions this year besides redistricting and FRA?
I do not. I agree with Floor Leader Plocker that there are a lot of things being tossed around, but I just don't think that there is a lot of energy to get people to come back for some of these other things. Things like elections, things like eminent domain. Those are issues that I believe we'll just have to wait until session starts in 2022.
Which is not as far away as you think. But before we get there, we got to get through at least two special sessions. Representative, thank you so much for joining me. And Joe, this was a great surprise, and we're always glad to have you back.
Well, thanks for asking me. It was great to be live in the studio with Jason once again.
For all of our stories, stlpr.org. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. How could people follow you on Twitter, Joe?
Jay Manis. That's JManNIES.
For all the FYIs you could possibly absorb. And Representative, how could people follow you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at Tracy McCreary.
We'll be back next time. Until then, so long.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.